Is your team not performing well? Is morale low and turnover high? Are you falling further behind the competition? I'm here to help. I'm your host, Shaney, and this is The Leadership Show, where business strategy and culture finally meet, and we make the long-awaited shift from rhetoric to results. I promise I'm not your typical boring leadership consultant, and I will help you get your shift together. Let's do this. Hello, leadershifters, and welcome to another episode of The Leadership Show with Shaney. Serious topic today. I'd like to welcome Aaron Ivey on The Leadership Show to talk about suicide prevention and education. This is a problem that is ongoing and has become exacerbated during the pandemic as people's anxiety and fear and depression have escalated during these times, and her organization and ones like it are more important than ever. So Aaron is the executive director of a nonprofit, a 501c3 called Speak Up, Reach Out, based in Eagle County, Colorado, which for those of you who know me is one of my old stomping grounds for many, many years. And Aaron and I have known each other for a long time because she was one of the new hires that came to work with me at Plum TV in Vail, Colorado in 2000 and something, when you graduated from Colorado State University. You were part of that awesome crew of predators, producer, editor, directors that came on to help us raise the profile of Plum TV. So it is really such a pleasure to have stayed in touch with you and to have you on the show all these years later to talk about something that is of critical importance. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Shaney, thank you so much. I'm honored to be here, and I'm excited that our paths have crossed in this space of leadership and culture and suicide prevention and how that all comes together.
Yes. So, you know, suicide and depression were so taboo to talk about in the workplace for a long time. It's like people had no qualms about, you know, being like, oh, I've got to go to the bathroom and give myself, you know, stick a needle to test my blood sugar because I'm diabetic, or I've got to go pump, or, you know, I've got a cold. And, you know, sitting there at the desk with tissues and snot running down their face. But God forbid if someone could comfortably, safely talk about being depressed or even suicidal, right? That's
or even just having a tough time. You know, we don't even talk about that.
Right. And why is that? Like, why wasn't it, and in some places still isn't it, safe to talk about those things?
I think because people are so scared of it. People in the workplace and really in the general community are so worried that they're going to have to take on all of your problem instead of just being a kind human who's there to listen and say, you know what? I don't have all the answers, but let me see what I can do to help you find them. They're so scared of having to fix it or not be able to fix it that they don't even want to start the conversation. And unfortunately, we have propelled this year after year after year by making, you know, sick policies about if you've gone to the doctor or if you have a physical illness. And so one of the things I want to talk about today is, you know, what is your sick policy and how can your teams use it? Because really allowing some more space there gives people space to do what they need to do to take care of themselves.
Absolutely. You know, you're right. I remember back when I was still working in corporate America, and I would occasionally take a mental health day. And I didn't tell them that's what I was doing. I just said I wasn't feeling well.
Yep.
Now, exactly. Can you say that to most employers? I'm going to take a mental health day?
Probably not. You can, my employees can come say that to me. But one of the things that I say is just, I don't ask a lot of questions about sick time, as long as it doesn't show up as an abuse of sick time.
Right.
And you haven't met a next threshold of more than 3 consecutive days, which then triggers some FMLA things. I'm not asking a whole bunch of questions. So if you need to do you in getting well, physically or mentally, yep, do so using your sick time.
Absolutely. And there's so many resources out there. And in fact, let's kind of table that discussion about resources for a little bit later in the conversation, because I do want to shine a light on your organization specifically before we get, you know, we zoom out a little bit to make it more generalized. So the mission of Speak Up, Reach Out is to prevent suicide in Eagle County through training, awareness, and hope. And HOPE is in all capital letters. Is it an acronym, or it's just that important that it was capitalized?
It's absolutely that important. Our board members, if you ask them what our organization is truly about, it's HOPE. Okay. And HOPE looks a lot of different ways for different people. For some people, that is the awareness piece, just understanding more about what's going on for them or a family member or a loved one that's struggling with mental illness. For some people, it's about support groups and peer support and how do we lift one another up when they're going through tough times. For some people, that looks like advocacy and how do I take what I've learned and all of the knowledge that I have to teach others or our legislators so that we can make this a life worth living, not just convincing people to live.
Right. Okay. So in other scenarios, when people say HOPE is not a strategy, that might be relevant for them. HOPE can be a strategy in the world of depression and suicide.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. HOPE has to be part of the picture with suicide prevention. But again, I think it looks like different things for different people. And that's why you have to come up with a strategy, if you will, for the different individual that you might be working with or the team that you're trying to support.
Right. Right. And what attracted you to this organization? If you wouldn't mind sharing a bit of your personal story about your friend who committed suicide and, you know, what impact that had on you.
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, I think it's really important that we share these stories. This is how we show people that there is hope and that they're not alone and that somebody else has gone through what they're going through. I lost my best friend, Luke, to suicide in 2007. I actually found out, I was sitting at my desk at Plum TV and got the phone call from my younger sister. And I remember vividly just immediately breaking down in the office. And so this is important to me on a couple different levels, because something amazing happened that day for me. One of my coworkers showed up in a way that probably changed how I saw all of this from the beginning. Mm. She had also lost a friend to suicide not too far before I did. And so she knew what it was like to go through that. And she knew that what I needed was somebody to just sit with until my husband could get there, because I wasn't driving home after finding out that news. And so the way that that woman showed up for me really made it clear to me once I started to go through the grieving process that I didn't want anybody to walk that alone and that grief and journey alone, because it's hard to navigate loss anyway,
right.
But tragic loss by suicide, there's so many questions about why and what could I have done. And I just wanted to be there for people. So then I started educating myself in suicide prevention. For me, something that's been very healing is now teaching suicide prevention and doing advocacy work. I also sit on the state Coalition for Suicide Prevention here in Colorado. And one of our big goals is advocacy at the state level and sometimes the federal level as well on how we can be a forerunner in the United States on suicide prevention and healing. Mm-hmm. Because it's all interconnected. When you lose somebody to suicide, you're automatically at risk for suicide yourself, because it's now on the table, right? It's seen as something that's accessible. And it just, for me, is about not wanting somebody to go through that alone. In Eagle County, in the years surrounding Luke's death, we lost about 13 other people that I knew between the ages of 13 and 30. And on average, we're seeing about 11 deaths by suicide in Eagle County per year. That doesn't seem like a big number, but Shani, you know that in Eagle County, we are very, very tight-knit, small community, and the ripple effects of those deaths have taken their toll for sure.
Absolutely.
That's why I'm here. I'm an open book. I will always share and I try to answer all your questions.
Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing that, and so sorry, you know, even all these years later, for your loss. It's like such a young age and so much to live for, and probably not enough closure as to what happened, what anybody could have done. And that's part of, I think, what makes it so difficult for people in the aftermath, is like, we don't understand. But that's part of it, is right. And I think that's where the hopelessness comes in, right? To go back to hope is a strategy. Because I mean, I have been depressed and have seen psychiatrists and have been on depression medications when I've needed them. And I've told that story before on this podcast and publicly, because I'm not ashamed of it. I had some serious shit happen, and I needed some support, both through talking and through, you know, some brain chemistry realignment.
I think that's a great way to put it.
and I'm so glad I did, because, you know, and that's one of the questions they ask on the assessment for depression, which has, you know, some number, I forget what it's called, is, you know, do you have a feeling of hopelessness? Right. And so if we can give people the hope. Now, let's shift a little bit and talk about how people can recognize the signs that folks in the workplace, whether they're direct reports, colleagues, or, you know, your managers could be suffering from depression. And of course, other people in your life, your friends, your family. What are the signs that people should be looking out for?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest things that shows up is, are they, and this is really hard in a pandemic, but are they not showing up for work like they used to? So that could mean physically, are they not showing up for work like they used to, but also mentally, and like their level of engagement. Did they used to be very involved in meetings and discussions, and now they kind of sit back and twiddle their pen and just have lost that sense of engagement? That might be an indication there's something else going on there. Another one is real big swings or changes in moods or behaviors. So are they having a lot of angry outbursts or sadness outbursts? Again, you talked about like not a lot of people are comfortable doing that in the workplace, but anger is one that shows up a lot. If somebody has that hot temper, and that's uncommon for them, right? We know we've all had the boss who has the hot temper and you just know that's who they are.
Right.
But if this is uncommon for somebody, again, there's probably more going on. And I think another reason that people, we want to separate work and home so much, right? But the things that are going on at home are absolutely affecting your bottom line in your workplace.
Yep.
So having those conversations, those check-ins of just kind of like, what's your truth? What's going on for you right now is going to glean a lot of information. If people are making comments like, if this promotion doesn't happen, or if I don't get this contract, if I don't make this deal, I might kill myself. Like, take that seriously and ask more questions, which leads me to, you know, anything that your gut, I think your gut feeling is really, really important. Mm-hmm. Anything that's really off about somebody, your gut's usually going to say something about it. And it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go home and die by suicide, But there's probably more going on. And how do we start asking those questions and having the conversation and getting them the resources so that they aren't to the place where suicide is an option?
Right. We want to get them when they're sad or mildly depressed and not when they're on the verge.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Got it.
Other things that I've seen show up in a workplace as far as signs, you know, I just keep coming back to the anger, but if people are really argumentative with their coworkers or really just can't seem to get along in any situation, that's an indicator that there's more going on. And again, I talk about the stuff that's happening outside of work. If they're going through a divorce, if they've experienced or are using substances, that can be a really big problem as far as layering of these things that then lead to suicide.
Right. Okay. So look for the signs. And even if you're not sure, if your gut's telling you something's off about this person, their patterns have shifted, like you're just noticing, trust your instincts and just start asking some simple questions like, you know, what's going on for you? What's your truth? You don't seem yourself. How can I support you? Right. So I think it's what, you know, what you said before is important. The leaders don't have to know how to fix it. They just have to learn how to recognize it, acknowledge it, and then help the person get the proper support.
That's it. Yep.
Some companies, larger ones in particular, there are EAPs, employee assistance programs that folks can be referred to. Not everybody has the benefit of that at their organization. And so if you're a leader at a company who doesn't have an EAP, where should you direct someone who's struggling?
Yeah, most communities have a community mental health operation of some sort that usually have a sliding scale for payment. They take Medicare, they take Medicaid, and different ways to access behavioral health services. There's always, if something's really urgent and you feel somebody's in crisis, there's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and that's free and accessible to anybody 24/7, 365 days a year. And we'll make sure you guys have all of these resources in notes and whatnot. But
yeah, for sure. We'll put all these things in the show notes.
It's really hard because each community is very different. But you would be surprised how much just sitting down with somebody for 10 minutes and saying, you know, actively listening to what's going on for them, how much that will change where they are in that moment.
Right.
You hit the nail on the head. You know, it isn't that hard. What you described is a very simple process. And so I hope that leaders can take that on. I also think it's important for leaders to not, it is everybody's business. I don't care if you're the CEO or you're the janitor, suicide prevention in the workplace and in our community is everybody's business.
Yes.
Many times it's easy to say, well, we have HR to deal with that. No, they might be a resource, but you can still have the conversation and refer them to HR to get the information on what are my mental health benefits? Do we have an EAP and how do I access it, et cetera?
Right. You know, and let's keep going on that point of it's everyone's responsibility. And, you know, one of the things that I love about your organization is how many different communities within the community you engage in these conversations, right? You've got law enforcement and teachers and, you know, and educators, and you've got healthcare professionals and, you know, politicians and who else is really important to engage in these conversations if you're finding that this is happening in your world?
Yeah, we're really lucky in Eagle County to have a very, very engaged community and to have taken the stance that we have on behavioral health. I think we see this nationally right now. There's the defund the police movement, which I wish they wouldn't have called it that because there is some good to what they're talking about, but it has a terrible name. But how do we engage law enforcement, the criminal justice system, and the mental health and behavioral health system to work cohesively so that we're serving the people who are going through mental health crisis the best? Showing up in full SWAT gear is not always going to be the best option. It seems obvious, but we seem to still be struggling a little. And so,
because it doesn't always work out like it does in like a Denzel Washington movie, where, you know, he plays the hero FBI agent who talks the kidnapper or the hostage taker off the ledge because he really is just depressed and doesn't feel acknowledged by society. And
yes, exactly.
Doesn't work out that way in real life.
It's amazing what we've learned from television. But I, as far as in your workplace, I think, so there's a website out there called Workplace Suicide Prevention.
Okay.
workplacesuicideprevention.com. And I highly, highly recommend that you take a look at this. We utilize many of the strategies and practices from this initiative within our workplace, but I recommend them to a lot of people because it's not just about having your staff trained in suicide prevention, but it's about how do we create culture and what is the culture and how do we promote well-being? And so to me, there is a level of involvement for any person in the community or staff. And so as far as who you need to be engaging in these conversations, who's interested, who's invested, find out. You'd probably be surprised how many people on your staff have been impacted by suicide or mental illness and want to be able to promote wellness and this type of thing in their organization.
Right. I know one of the people who works on your staff had mentioned that a few years ago, she learned that 1/3 of middle-aged school students have experienced suicide ideation, and that blew her mind, especially because she had middle school students, you know, as children. And, you know, so it starts to hit home for people when they hear statistics like that, you know, so even if they haven't been personally affected in, you know, in their immediate sphere of influence, it's not hard to imagine that they could be with statistics like that. And then, you know, suicide is, at least before COVID, was the 10th largest cause of death in the United States. I'm thinking maybe, I don't know if it's higher now, less high, right? If it's a more leading cause, if there's been more suicide because of unemployment or, you know, all of the other stressors that have come along with a pandemic. But point is, it's a leading cause of death, not to be ignored, right? I mean, so let's go back to the idea, folks, that it is your responsibility. It's everybody's responsibility. You would not, like, if someone in the office was choking or having a heart attack, you wouldn't just stand by and let it happen. You would help, you would call 911. Well, this is no different. It's just another aspect of health, right? I mean, our brains are part of our bodies. So this shouldn't have the kind of stigma that it has. And I mean, and people like Erin and me, we will talk about this till we're blue in the face until it's okay to talk about, right? I mean, it's amazing to me how much progress has been made in other areas where we're trying to promote greater awareness, understanding, tolerance, you know, whether it's around, you know, gender, sexual preference, race, that are making it more standard to be able to talk about, you know, that sort of stuff in the workplace. And yet this has lagged behind and it affects everybody.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think if there's one thing that we could take with us from the pandemic is that many people have given themselves enough grace within the pandemic because, right, we're all experiencing this to some degree. So I've seen a huge amount of grace that people are starting to give themselves. And a huge number of people say, you know what? I was doing okay, but then the pandemic, I need to talk to somebody. Great. I hope we take some of that with us into whatever is next.
Yes.
Because I think it's going to be so easy to say, well, the pandemic's over, so now I should be fixed and fine. Mm-hmm. No, you're still you, and you still need the supports and the help that you need. And that may ebb and flow, and it might look like clinical support at one point. It might look like peer at another. It might look like just taking a bubble bath at another time. Like, I think it's really important to know that all of this is mental well-being, all of those things. Sure. And if we knew the perfect mix, I wouldn't have a job. That's the goal for me, right?
If we're
all different.
Like yours didn't need to exist anymore. That's the definition of success and suicide prevention.
Yes. Working myself out of a job, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, you know, what you just said begs pointing out a distinction. The education is not just for people to recognize it when they see it in other people, but to recognize it themselves and to educate people. What can you do when you're feeling sad, when you're feeling lonely, when you're feeling hopeless, when you're feeling disconnected, fill in the blank. And I'll refer people to your website because you've got these really cool coping cards that I was fascinated by. I love tools like that. And they are grouped into, you know, like to knowledge and listening and leadership, you know, so there's different categories. So what are some of the things that you all recommend people do who themselves are starting to feel, you know, sad, angry, depressed, suicidal?
Yeah. Absolutely. The coping cards are, there's 54 of them on our website. They're English and Spanish. So you can use them to help you or your teams. But ultimately, they are tricks and tips to take care of your own mental health and well-being. Shani was talking about that there's different types. And so one of them is about how do you listen to yourself? So it describes how to do a body scan and really listen to like, what is your body telling you? Do I have a headache? Is my brain foggy? How's my breathing? How's my gut? And it takes you through those steps to really start to learn to listen to your body and what your body is telling you about yourself. There's other ones about, am I experiencing soul exhaustion? Which I think is really important during the pandemic. Mm. I think it's important anytime, but I think people's souls are so exhausted right now. And then on the flip side, there's one on soul care. So if you meet all of these criteria for, yes, I have soul exhaustion, well, there's another one to say, this is how I can start to identify how to flip that script.
Okay. And how can you tell the difference between something that's temporary or episodic versus chronic in this area?
So a general rule of thumb is that everybody's going to experience sadness. And if you really start to feel that you're experiencing sadness or overwhelm or anxiety for more than 2 weeks, that's really a trigger to start to talk to a professional around what's going on for me. It's not a hard, fast rule. Like if you're having thoughts of depression or of suicide, you should talk to someone as soon as possible. And through a crisis line, if you're already seeing a clinician, letting them know about those thoughts. But we teach in the middle and high schools that the difference between sadness and depression is that ongoing more than 2 weeks time frame. Again, rule of thumb, please listen to your body and what your brain is telling you. But that's a good differentiator.
Yeah. Yeah. That really resonates for me because I was sad yesterday. I found out that one of my friends from New York, someone I've known since I was in my 20s when I lived in New York after college, and she was part of my crew that went out in Manhattan and in the Hamptons and so forth. She had been battling brain cancer for 4 years and she died. I found out yesterday that she died the evening before. And, you know, she's my age. She's 51, has kids, had a, you know, great career. And it, you know, it really, it made me sad. Of course, it made me sad for a lot of different reasons. And I've learned at this point, like, not to force myself to do things when I'm sad. Like, I had a laundry list of work things that I needed to do yesterday. They weren't hard and fast deadlines, but they were scheduled in my calendar. And I just didn't have the mental bandwidth to do it. I'm like, I just need to feel sad right now. And so shut off the computer. I went for a walk. As you know, I'm very fortunate I can go for a walk because it's 80 degrees and sunny here in Fort Lauderdale. And I just engaged in self-care for the rest of the day because I'm like, I'm not going to just like force myself, because that makes you more sad when you're, yes, when you're sitting in front of the computer, not being productive and spinning your wheels. That maybe doesn't make you sad. It makes you frustrated, but who wants to be frustrated on top of sad?
Yeah. Well, and to that point, one, I'm so sorry for your loss. I know that you've had a couple recent losses, and I appreciate your willingness to share. But here in Eagle County, we lost a couple weeks ago now, four really prominent members of our community. Three were in a single avalanche, and then a fourth in another avalanche. And mm-hmm. We've been doing a lot of work within the community on how are we dealing with this, and how are we grieving, and what can we do? And one of the questions that came up the other day is, okay, so I'm at work because I worked with this person who died in the avalanche. I'm focusing so much on how to make sure I cover their job now that they're not here, and what are all the to-dos, and I'm feeling very overwhelmed. And, you know, for you, you were able to just shut it off and go do self-care. But for some people, they're like, I can't just shut it off. There's people relying on me. Like, what do I
right,
do?
Right.
So my recommendation to that, it's really hard and it does take practice. Go in the bathroom, take 10 minutes, ugly cry, get it out, whatever it is. If you need to like punch your fist or what, like get some of that pent up energy out, give yourself 10 minutes to do that, to feel the things, so that you can reset. Yep. Stress balls. You know, there's lots of different ways that you can get some of that pent up energy out.
Yep.
Then take a minute to set intention. Okay. I've done that. I did that. I'm not done. It can come back. I've acknowledged it, but I need to get this project done, and set your intention for what's next. And it takes practice. I'm not perfect at it. I don't think anybody is. But when somebody wants a tactical tip on how do I walk, you know, deal with it when I get bad news in the workplace and I can't just turn everything off, that's my recommendation.
Yeah. Okay. So to recap, because I think this is really important, folks, you don't have the luxury of turning off the computer like I did because you don't work for yourself. And although you could have the conversation with your manager about like needing, you yes. know, a half a day off or something. And I get that sometimes there are projects that don't stop and customers that need tending to and all that sort of stuff. So when that happens and you can't leave, go to the bathroom, cry your fucking eyes out, do an ugly cry, right? And make an intent, like take some deep breaths, and make an intention that can last you at least through the end of the workday. And then you can go home and do some more coping.
Yeah, exactly. And okay. For some people, it might look like going for a walk or, you know, just getting, again, it's that pent up energy that's causing yeah. you that like, I can't get anything done. So if you can kind of find a way to release that, do 20 squats. This is in the coping cards as well. You know, do 20 squats and a few jumping jacks. Get some of that out of your system. But it is, and loss is hard. No matter what, loss is hard.
It is. Another thing that I found in your coping cards that I really liked, there's a couple of ones that I want to mention and discuss on the podcast. And one does involve culture. So this is back speaking to leaders, inspire your team to be deeply human.
Yeah, I love
contextualize that for us here.
Yeah. So this is really about acknowledging that there's, first of all, like just like the 12-step program, right? We have to acknowledge that there's something wrong, that there's stress, that there's low morale, whatever it is, we have to acknowledge that first. And then you really have to role model how people can show up for others, for their peers, for their bosses. I think that's another thing that's really not always present, is that my employees can show up for me and make sure that I'm okay too.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times there's disconnect there. You know, but what are you feeling? Why are you feeling it? And then also being able to say, I've felt that way too. And having empathy is really what we're asking you to do.
Right.
You know, and then tie it back to what, you know, what are the core values of the organization, and how do we work together to move on to this next step, and building resilience or upping morale.
Got it. Okay. So empathy, the key to being deeply human. I couldn't agree more. So another one of the cards I saw was labeled with the take action tab, and it's write your hero's journey. So tell us about that tool and its efficacy.
So like I said at the very beginning, storytelling is so incredibly important in people understanding that they're not alone. And every single one of us has a story. First and foremost, sometimes people go into comparative suffering, or that what I've gone through isn't enough to be a story. But the hero's journey is really a guide into how you can articulate what you've been through, and who are the players, and what were the trials and tribulations, and what were the successes as you go around the circle. And it continues to go and go if you allow it. But it's a model for you to be able to get out maybe what's in your head too. Sure. What is my story?
Right. And maybe even with stories that don't have an end yet, right? Because if you're in the process of figuring out what your journey is through depression, let's say, you can write your own ending, or pick your own adventure endings to stories. Yes. are really fun. Well, hopefully you don't want your adventure to end in suicide. How do you want your adventure to end? And get some resonance to that plot, that piece of the plot.
Yep. Yeah, it's five steps that you can kind of go through to identify, because, you know, somebody said to me, or I heard somebody say, I don't think they said it to me once, that you've survived every tough thing that you've been through so far. Right? I mean, we have. And I think this is a way to acknowledge that.
Right.
What are the tough things that you've done? And give yourself some celebration for showing up for your life and that you have done hard things.
Right. Yeah. So in fact, let's celebrate every single one of us that has been in pandemic mode for a year now. Like,
yes.
Pat ourselves on the back, because it's been hard. Different levels of hard for different people and different times and different places, but there's no one untouched by what's happened in the world for the past year. And a year is a big marker. Like, you know, we're coming up on our shelter in place started February 28th, or, you know, whatever. We are at that 1 year mark, and it's like, not that we want to celebrate the pandemic, but let's celebrate that we're here a year later and we did survive, and that we learned some things along the way, not the least of which is appreciating our friends and our family and all the good things in our life that much more than we used to.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. And appreciating teachers.
Yes.
Jeannie, I want to be a teacher. Have kids being educated by a Zoom at home now. I know you respect teachers a lot more than you ever did before.
I wanted to be a teacher growing up, and I tell people all the time, I don't know what I was thinking. They are saints. And I just, yeah, we owe so much to them and our frontline workers for sure. Yeah.
Well, Erin, you are a teacher.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Just, you know, not in, you know, the public.
Not a middle school teacher.
Right. You are educating people about big, important things every day of your life. So thank you for the work that you and your staff and your volunteers do in Eagle County and the reverberations that that great work has for, you know, the rest of the country and the world, because, you know, you're just putting good karma out and we don't know where it's going to land. So it's good. So
well, thank you
for joining us and sharing your story and giving us some great advice. If people want to know more, if any of my Vail peeps are listening to this and you want to get involved as a volunteer, or anyone wants to give some cold hard green cash money to this deserving organization, how can people reach you, Erin?
So everything about our organization can be found at speakupreachout.org. You can find the coping cards there. Please use them if you think they'd be helpful to your teams or to you. All the information about the different trainings and programs that we offer are there, as well as a donate button if you are so inclined. And then so are all of the resources that you could possibly need in this time. I want to make sure that people have access to the crisis line. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 800. Oh my goodness. I'm used to the Colorado one. The Colorado one is 844-493-8255. And we'll get the national crisis line, because I'm having a total brain fart, which is not allowable.
Okay. We forgive
but
you.
This is life right now with the pandemic, right?
Right.
And then the workplacesuicideprevention.com just has some great tips on how to become more than just offering an EAP as mental wellness in your organization.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that. And folks, again, can't reiterate enough, pay attention to this. If it hasn't affected you yet in your life, you're lucky. It will affect you at some point. You will know someone. And every bit of empathy and understanding that exists in the world will do a small part in helping prevent more suicides. So look for the signs. Even if you're not a people leader, you're a person, right? So look for some of the signs that Erin was mentioning earlier in the call, that someone, like, their personality has shifted, they're acting funny, they're angry all the time, they're defensive, and that's uncharacteristic of them, they're withdrawn, right? These are all signs. And then remember, you don't have to fix it. Just talk to the person, pull them aside in private or into a Zoom room privately, and figure out, like, what's going on for you? Like, just ask the most gentle, empathetic, non-threatening questions that you possibly can, and then help them find their way to some resources that are going to help, right? That's really all you have to do, is ask some empathetic questions. And for those of you who are listening and identifying with this and saying, yeah, you know what? I have been sadder than usual, and I have been snapping at people, and that's not really like me. So if you're starting to think, oh, this could be me, how long has this gone on? If it's more than 2 weeks, which was sort of the rule of thumb that Erin mentioned, come to the website, look at some coping cards, pursue some talk therapy, reach out to a good friend, start to take the actions to care for yourself, and speak up, right? Get the support that you need. So again, Erin, Executive Director of Speak Up, Reach Out, thank you so much for joining us today. This was very educational and obviously very important.
Thank you so much, Shani. And I finish with this on everything that we do. If you or someone you know is in crisis, please call the crisis line at 800-273-8255.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, leadershifters. Until next time. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay well.